Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Alice Shelton, and joining me is Lori Strawn. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Alice. I apologize to our listeners. I have a cold, so bear with me.
We will, and we're glad to be listening to you and not sitting right next to you, as nice as you are. Well, Lori, this week as I was kind of looking for inspiration for a show topic, I ran across this really wonderful booklet of daily reflections that I used during Advent and Christmas last year. So at the risk of blending the Easter and Christmas seasons, I'm going to. Yeah, so it's our prerogative, right?
Right.
Well, the booklet is called Daybreaks, and it's a really wonderful creation of a woman whose name is Paula D'Arcy. I kind of came to know Paula's work through my interest in Richard Rohr, who we've talked about before, his books and his retreat tapes. So if you have ever had one of those moments in reading or listening to a speaker when you thought, I know that, I've felt that, I could have written that or said that, how did she know that's what I've always felt? You will love Paula D'Arcy because everything I've really read or listened to that she's done, that's the response I've had. So the reflection I've chosen for today is called Finding My Way, and here it is. We need monastic rules for our ordinary lives, some small disciplines to admonish us to stop rushing, to get out into nature and look around. We need to sit in the dark or read poetry. We need to be still. We need to experience our aloneness apart from our roles. We need to make our own pilgrimage just as Mary and Joseph walked toward Bethlehem. We need to walk and walk and walk until we remember what really matters and how much it matters. We need to walk until we remember there is no way life should be. We all made that up. Even so, we keep responding to life as if we were entitled to things, as if there were things we deserved to have, and now our plan is being spoiled. I read the story of several middle-aged women who walked right out of their lives one day. Not forever, just for a while. They caused a great stir as they strode single file down the highway. They were instant news, but they weren't trying to be news. It had just occurred to them that they were too far from home, the inner home, and they pledged to walk until they felt reconnected. They needed to find their way back to themselves. So they slowed it all down, stopped rushing, started looking. The Christmas song says, "O holy night," but you have to be still to know it. And then the question for reflection for that day was, can I respond to life in a new way? Well, when I read short reflections, I try really hard to focus on one or two lines or words that jump off the page at me, sort of like a shorthand Lectio Divina, I guess. For me, the words that rise up from this reflection are these. We need to experience our aloneness apart from our roles. Can you respond to what that means to you, Lori?
Well, it's so easy to get locked into our roles. There's sort of the work me, the wife, the daughter, all the ways that we split ourselves up in order to deal with the world. And it's important to get away from all that and be alone with ourselves because it's easy, I think, to lose our authenticity when we're focusing on playing roles. And the wholeness of who you are incorporates all those roles, but it's bigger than the sum total of them because it includes the parts of you that you don't want other people to see. And it's easy to conflate ourselves and our self-worth with how well we play our roles, but that's not who we are, and that's not where we should derive our self-worth. Only through self-examination, which I think has to be done alone because that's the only thing that can prevent a person from reverting to a role. That's the only way we can reclaim the totality of who we are as people, I think.
Yeah, I think you said that well. I know when we were at the woods, one of the things I would do when I would walk from place to place on campus is I had this like imaginary video about myself going on. I think this is when I worked there, and I would think, you know, this is Alice's daughter, Alice you know, Alice friend, Alice teacher, Alice whatever. And, you know, what you don't get when you do that, you get a lot of compartmentalization. I think you're not, as you say, you're not getting the authentic self. You're not getting to that place. You're not getting the stuff that fills in those walls in between those roles. And that's, I think, what that silence does. It kind of creates that space. I just thought it was interesting that D'Arcy uses we need to experience our aloneness, you know, our individualness. So that, I don't think that means loneliness. I think it just means,
no,
in some ways, separateness or whatever. Same, you agree
right
with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, more almost our uniqueness, our separateness from other people. I mean, I know for many women, being a mother, I mean, your mom, that's you, you're called mom, that's your name, that's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You very rarely get to revert back to, okay, here I am, here's my first name, this is who I am, not as
mm-hmm.
mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose that the fact, this concept of roles, if you think about the two of us in this show, I suppose that in this show we really are playing a role, if you will. And so, you know, I kind of question, gosh, does this mean that we are not being authentic? What do you think about that?
I think we're more authentic, or, yeah, I do. I think we're more authentic on this show in many ways than we are in other facets of our lives. I know I am. I think
mm-hmm.
I speak more from my heart than I would as business me or, you know, wife me, maybe. It depends on the circumstances. But I think also because we do this over the internet, there's less
mm-hmm.
of that feeling of being observed.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you're freer to let yourself be who you really are.
Yeah, I think that's true because we might have someone reference having heard one of our shows, or we might know someone we know has listened, or they brought it up, but we really don't know who listens to us.
No,
or,
no,
and,
no idea.
Or who? Nor do we know who doesn't. But I think that's right. And it's funny that you would say what you just said about the internet, because really, I mean, in some ways, you talk about the most public place you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a perception of privacy, which is probably fodder for a whole other show, which we might have.
Absolutely.
Well, I just wonder, I just think it's interesting that I think the fact that we have different roles does not mean that there is no authenticity in those roles. I don't think that's what you were trying to say at all, but I was thinking about that in terms of, are those things mutually exclusive? No, you have to get to your authentic self, and I think you said that correctly and well, or at least I agree with it. But I don't think that means that you're being inauthentic. I just don't think you're able to be whole when you're in your role.
Right,
so,
right. I think the people that know you at work might not recognize you in your normal life in some ways because you're a little bit different at work than you are at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. Well, though I shared with you kind of the words or the section that really touched me most from the reflection, what touched you most in the reflection and why?
It's that the line that you highlighted, that first line, we need monastic rules for our ordinary lives. And it, because it speaks to a subject that you and I have often discussed, and that's awareness and living with intention. And it seems to me that monastic rules for ordinary life would serve us very well in forcing intention and attention to life rather than just getting caught up in all the busyness of it.
Well, you've done a good job of kind of describing it, but what are the monastic rules you have in your life, if you have any?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would call a monastic rule any way of living that's prescribed in order to keep spirituality front and center in your life. And that's
mm-hmm.
going to vary widely from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
I do have monastic rules in my life. One that just popped to mind maybe very minor, I say the Hail Mary three times a day, once to celebrate
you
Mary's
do?
Relationship, but yeah, with once for God the Father, once for God the Son, and once for the Holy Spirit. I try to make sort of an occasion of the prayer significant, like a moment when I feel the presence of God in the person of the Father or the Son or the Holy Spirit. And I pray at other set times during the day, too. And I like to always read something spiritual at the end of the day. Right now it's a book on the life of Christ that my mom sent me. Just to round out the day, and it sort of plants a seed for something to think about or work on for the next day. How about you?
That's funny. I did not know that about the Hail Marys for you. I mean, how many years have we been doing this show? 3 years almost. That's amazing. I definitely have rules and patterns for just about everything in my life, and I think the monastic rules, if I would call them that, would be I definitely make a practice of going to Mass on weekends. I mean, going to church
right.
every week.
Right.
I have found that my experiences and responsibilities as a sacristan, the experiences being a sacristan really are kind of a monastic process for me. Learning about the liturgy, it just exposes me on and on to a liturgy and liturgical
right.
experience and the things of that. You know this, I walk every morning. And so that's a really good, that's a definite practice for me where I pray and think and just let my mind wander. And I read in the morning, every morning. So, hey, can you keep talking for a minute? I need to kind of handle something for my mother-in-law real quick, okay?
Not a problem. Yeah, I think
cool.
it's anything that you sort of ritualize. And as Alice was describing, she ritualizes her mornings. She lights candles. She reads. It's got very much a, it's set up very specifically in order to drive her mind to a spiritual place. And I think any practice you do that's like that, whether it's prayer or walking or anything that can drive spirituality to the front of your mind is a good practice to have and could be considered a monastic practice. Something we were going to discuss was that Alice believes strongly in the power of walking around. In her script to me, she writes, "You hear a lot of business buzz about management by walking around and walk the walk and that sort of thing. So others are thinking about it in different contexts too. She knows the value that walking brings to her life, and she asks if I have any connection to walking, and did I think that there's any such a thing as a theology of walking? Well, here's my answer. As an asthmatic, especially in the springtime, walking can be somewhat hazardous to my health, but I do enjoy walking, especially since I am, as Alice knows, but our listeners do not, I'm 6 feet tall, and most of that is legs, so I do like to take my legs out on the road and see what they can do every once in a while. But I think that you can walk in a theological sense in many different ways. You can walk your way to an epiphany through reflection, for instance, through discussion with somebody you trust, or as the author of this reflection says, sit in the dark or read poetry. Those are both ways to me of walking in a spiritual sense. Any process that allows you to reach spiritual understanding, whatever that is, to me is the theology of walking. Hey, Alice, you're back?
I'm back. Sorry. Thank you for slipping right in there. Well, I'm definitely going to have to listen to the archive version because about all I heard is you say that's what the theology of walking is to you, and it had to do with poetry and sitting in the darkness, so that'll be cool.
Any ritual that brings you to a place of spiritual awareness, to me, has the same effect as that theology of walking.
I think so, too. Well, and if you've talked about this, you'll have to redirect me. But one thing I thought about when I was reviewing this reflection are kind of the next questions, and I'll answer these too, so I don't want to put you on the spot. But are you afraid to be still or to be alone or to find your way back to yourself? And if you did find your way back to yourself, what do you think that would look like?
Well, tellingly, when I'm nervous or afraid, I very much dislike being still. But otherwise, I love it. And I have no problem being alone. In fact, I think I'm more comfortable alone than not. I would say few people, including myself, are really comfortable finding their way back to themselves because it means confronting aspects of themselves that they're not real fond of. And if I found my way back to myself, it would mean embracing myself at all times of my life, mistakes I've made, awkwardness, even really, now that I think of it, my penchant for being alone. I mean, it's comfortable for me, but I know that that can be perceived by others as snobbishness or dislike, when to me it's just a reflex. When I retreat when I'm uncomfortable, like a turtle.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd have to even confront that and my own timidity and overcautiousness and all sorts of things about myself that I wish were different. But you know what? That brings up a question for me to you. Can anybody really fully accept themselves? Should we or shouldn't we always be trying to work on ourselves to be better?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And if you were listing things about what you would have to face, because I hadn't even gotten so far as to think about having to retrace parts of myself before. I mean, so, wow, that's just interesting. Well, heck, did I forget the question there? Oh, can anybody totally accept themselves? Lori, No, I don't think we can, and I don't know that it's necessarily because we have to keep working on things. Probably that's part of it. But I think just the fact that both of us, each of us, would list first things we feel are shortcomings about ourselves, mm-hmm. and nowhere in either of our lists would there be acknowledging and accepting the things that we think are good about ourselves, because we don't even go that direction when we're asked to face ourselves.
Yeah.
And why? I mean, that essential bent towards self-criticism, I think, is really a way of describing the sinfulness we're all trying to make sense of for ourselves. So, you know, no, the short answer is I don't think anybody ever probably can or should fully accept themselves. But I think the process can start to look different as you go further into it. And that's what I'm hopeful about as I get older, that I'm not just, that acceptance doesn't mean always focusing on and being okay with accepting shortcomings. That it can also be really looking at things that are skills and talents and saying, you know what, I really have these gifts and this is a really good thing about me and I don't need to be embarrassed about that and there's more I should be doing with those gifts, so let's focus some elbow grease on those things. I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, I agree. And even just as you said that, I thought, well, if that means that we're confronting our sinful selves, that's a good thing. That's a helpful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's so, I find it so complicated to, you know, I always want things to be linear. I want there to be mm-hmm. a clear beginning, a clear middle, and a clear ending, and I want to know the steps and the outcomes, and that's just not how life is.
Yeah, and I want to be able to accept each leg of that, you know, like, okay, that mm-hmm. was my childhood, and I accept that, and it's all fine, mm-hmm. and then this is the next stage of my life, and that was all okay, but you can't. You just keep going back and nitpicking at little mm-hmm. things all along the way, even years and years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in some ways, I think our Western culture, and particularly our whole, you know, counseling and self-help and that sort of support system, you know, kind of sets that up. And I'm not saying that's totally bad. Certainly, knowing from where you came and the things that happened and having that context is helpful. But, you know, gosh, to really never put some closure on some of those things just, oh, it almost makes me nauseous thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
Because don't we all know people who...
Another section of this reflection that I really found telling, which was the part that she says, even so, we keep responding to life as if we were entitled to things, as if there were things we deserve to have, and now our plan is being spoiled. Because, boy, don't we do that? We all think, well, of course, I deserve to be successful, rich, happy, blah, 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 blah. It, you just take it for granted. When were we ever guaranteed any of that?
Yeah. But, you know, we weren't, and yet
exactly.
When you read things, it's like when you read things like this, it just it's what I mean about this woman. I mean, she says things out loud that you're like, oh, that's just against the rules to even bring that up, and you're bringing it up.
Yep.
Yeah, she definitely notices the elephants in the rooms of life, which I think is really cool.
Well, so
I guess here's with this. What's the way forward? I mean, what do we do with this?
Well, I guess it comes down to the question that you posed. Can I respond to life in a new way? Does that mean adding monastic practices to your life in order to prompt you to be more thoughtful? Does that mean finding your own theology of walking, whatever that is? Does that mean accepting the good parts of yourself and not focusing so much about being critical about your life? All those things, I think. I mean, all those things would be way forward.
Yeah. And I am big on being mindful of that. Not that you're tracking it, you know, moment by moment, but I have a hard time seeing progress unless I set almost appointments to see progress. And I think I think monastics would say that is a part of the monastic way. I mean, I think there are varying levels of monasticism. Certainly you can have places where there are monks who never see anybody else and they really do truly pray and meditate all day. But, you know, there are then monastics who, like I think we're monastics because I think we try to have these practices. But certainly Jesuits are one group that try very much on a weekly basis to do some kind of faith sharing so that they're having these kind of benchmarks times. And I think that's
important.
That's something that's important. Yep.
Yeah, yep. I agree. And to some degree, I would say this show serves as something of an accounting, a reckoning for me anyway.
You know, it does for me, too, as I was, you know, with the alternating way in which we share who kind of is in charge of the topic each week. I definitely, even though I'm frequently doing it at the 11th hour, as you know, from when you get my materials, but it's definitely part of the rhythm of my life. I mean, it's something I value and something I set aside time and mental energy for it, even if I'm not getting things to you a day in advance, I begin the thinking about it process further in advance than you would necessarily know. And I think that's kind of liturgical for me in a way.
Yeah, and the way that each show sort of calls back different moments to each of us, I think. You know, this show made me think about our show about the examine, made me think about all the times we've talked about intentionality in our lives. You know, again, that's a way of sort of charting our progress.
Yeah, I think that's right. This is one of those trips that you're on, though. That the fact that you're still on it, I think, is a good sign of progress. Whereas other trips, you know, coming to an end is a good thing. It probably isn't a bad thing to come to an end, but it's good to know you're still up and walking around and trying.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate our listeners for joining us this week. I'm very glad that none of you gave up listening to our show for Lent this year, at least none that we know about. What will we discuss next week, Lori?
We're going to go back to a favorite of ours, Thomas Merton, and we're going to walk through some of his poetry, which we have not done before. So until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Great. Have a great week.